Captain Fritz. There is the prisoner.
There is Leon. He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot.
I did not have an assignment that day because my partner was on vacation, and my captain directed me and said, why don't you just stay around the office and take care of any problems that might come in? And when we drove into the basement where Oswald was later shot, the motorcade was just approaching Houston Street, so nothing had happened at that time. So the president was shot sometime between the time I got out of the car and turned the radio off and walked through the basement, caught the elevator to the third floor. Because when I entered the office, my lieutenant told me, said, well, they shot the president. And I thought he was kidding me because I said, oh, yeah, because I was just listening to it. So it didn't take me but just a second or two to realize that he's telling me the truth. We didn't have the cell phone or communications at that time. But the sheriff's squawk box was on, as we call it, and at about that time, they put out the call that a police officer had been shot in Oak Cliff. So then I called my lieutenant and I asked him who's taking that call on the police officer. He said, I don't have anybody to take it. So I told him I would take it. Any prisoners brought in connected with that murder was assigned to me also. So he was my assigned prisoner. I sat down in the room with him and began to talk to him. But I had no clue at that time that he was going to be a suspect in the presidential assassination. I was talking to him strictly about the police officer, which he denied. He said, I didn't shoot anybody. And I found that very strange later when I got to thinking about it. And I thought, he knew that we was going to wrap him with this other one sooner or later, and he's getting his denials in early. I didn't shoot anybody. And after about 15 minutes or so, Captain Fritz had come back from the school book depository. They had found the rifle and gathered up the shells and so forth down there, and he was getting ready to send detectives in different directions to look for him when somebody told him that the man Lavelle's talking to has got a name similar to that. So he opened the door and asked me what his name was, and I told him. Then he asked Oswald, said, where do you work? And when he said, the school book depository. Beginning Friday night, we began to get anonymous calls that they were going to take him away from us and string him up and do all sorts of things to him. And that kept on through all day Saturday. And when time to transfer him on Sunday, Captain, I talked about it, and I said, well, I'll handcuff myself to him. That way, if they take him, they got to take me too, and I wasn't going to go willingly, so they'd have a little problem. And then in the process of handcuffing him, I made the remark to him. I said, Lee, if anybody shoots at you, I hope they're as good a shot as you are, meaning, of course, they'd hit him and not me. And he kind of smiled, and he said, well, nobody's going to be shooting at me. I said, well, you know what to do if they do. And he said, well, Captain Fritz told me to follow you. I'll follow you. I said, in that case, you'll be on the ground in a hurry. It was all business from there on, and I knew that those people were waiting outside, and I really didn't know what was in store for us out there. Everybody was clicking their cameras and all that, and the floodlights come on, and that temporarily blinded me. I had met Jack Ruby 13 years earlier when he was running a dance hall down in South Dallas. I knew who he was and everything, but I never had any association with him otherwise. I spotted him in the crowd as I went through the door into the basement area. I spotted him. He was standing approximately in the middle of the driveway, and he had that pistol in his right hand and holding it tight against his leg. So I immediately jerked on Oswald to try to pull him behind me. But since I was right up against him, I didn't have any leverage, and all I did was turn his body so that instead of the bullet hitting him dead center, it went about 3 or 4 inches to the left of the navel and went all the way through him. He never gained. He dropped over and went unconscious right after he was shot, and he never did regain. I thought perhaps that he expired on the way because about halfway to Parkland, I was sitting in the back of the ambulance with him holding his wrist trying to get a pulse, but I didn't find one. But about halfway to Parkland, he moved a little bit and groaned, and then he just went completely limp. And I've always thought that that's probably when he expired, but they worked on him until 1:05 p.m. that day before they pronounced him dead. I let the conspiracy people talk me into coming to one of their meetings. They used to have them every year, and they'd be up to 150 or so gathered at the hotel. I finally let them con me into coming down, and I made them a proposition at that time. That's been 40 years ago. I told them, I said, if you can bring me any kind of information to show that there's another individual involved in this and bring me the evidence that will stand up before grand jury, I will take it to the grand jury. Well, that was over 40 years ago, and none of them have brought me anything yet.
The shot has rung out, and Lee Oswald has fallen. A shot has rung out here. A struggle is being in place. Shot has rung out. And ladies and gentlemen, Lee Oswald has just been shot.